All right, so we are holding at the top of Memhei Amud Aleph. We discussed yesterday that when it comes to the dinim of Mukta, we said that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda. We have the Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon throughout the Masechta. We've had several times before. We have a lot in our Sugya about that Rabbi Yehuda has a broad definition of Mukta and Rabbi Shimon has a narrower definition. We also said that on top of that is another Machlokas where Rabbi Shimon said, where Rabbi Yehuda says that if something was Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains Mukta for the, if it was Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains Mukta for the whole Shabbos, whereas Rabbi Shimon disagrees with that concept also. So we mentioned that there was a din that Rav said, a case where you have money that was on a bed before Shabbos, where you wanted it to be there, where then even if the money was removed on Shabbos, then it remains Mukta for all of Shabbos. So we said that works according, that would be true according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rav holds the Rabbi Yehuda. So it works as Hachi Nami Mitzabia, the Rav to Rabbi Yehuda's realize. Yes, in fact, it is logical to say that Rav, in fact, in the beginning of Mukta, holds like Rabbi Yehuda. The Amar Rav, because we find a related din, that Rav says, Manichin Ner Al Gabe Deko B'Shabbos, you would be allowed before Shabbos to put a lamp on a tree, on a branch of a tree or something. Ve'ein Manichin Ner Al Gabe Deko B'Yamzer, but you're not allowed to do that on Yamzer. Now, the idea is like that. Midrabanan, you're not allowed to use trees on Shabbos. Using trees includes climbing on them, it includes putting things on them or taking them off or whatever. So in this case, if you put the lamp there before Shabbos, now, the Gemara is going to point out, this that we're saying that now, so on Yom Tov, Rav is saying you wouldn't be allowed to do that, because on Yom Tov, the lamp itself is not mukta, even while it's burning, it's not mukta, let alone after it goes out. So therefore, there's a concern. Therefore, you'd have to be concerned if you put the lamp on a branch of a tree that you might end up taking it off there on Yom Tov. So therefore, it would be also to do that on Yom Tov. The Rosh learns a little bit differently. Not so much that you might take it off, but that you might climb the tree to put it on or take it off, as the case may be. Anyway, the point is that on Yom Tov, therefore, it's also, but this that Rav is saying that you're allowed to do it on Shabbos implies that you're not allowed to move the lamp at all on Shabbos. Otherwise, if you were allowed to move it after it went out, like Rav Shimon says, then you're back to the same problem. How can you do that? You can't do it on Shabbos any more than Yom Tov. That's what Gemara says. Iyam at the Shlema de Rav could have heard this way. If you say that Rav agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on the definition of Mukta, in particular on the concept that once it was Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains Mukta for all of Shabbos. And actually here we have both in him. We said in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to move that Rabbi Yehuda had said that the lamb is Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos and remains Mukta for the whole Shabbos, whereas Rav Shimon had said it's only Mukta as long as it's burning, because we said he didn't hold that it was considered Mukta in the first place, given that you know that at some point on Shabbos it's going to go out. We said whenever you have a reasonable expectation that it is going to go out on Shabbos, then you didn't set it out in mind, therefore you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Rav Shimon also, we said, didn't hold of the concept that once it's Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains Mukta for all of Shabbos. So given those two facts, then when Rav's din presupposes that you can't move it on Shabbos, it shows that he holds like a Yehuda in both of those din. So therefore, if you hold that Hainu Rishani, then Shabbos the Yom Tov, then that explains why there's a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. So you're not allowed to put the lamp there before Yom Tov, because then you might end up taking it off there on Yom Tov, climbing up there to take it off or whatever, and then you would be over on the Issur de Rabbanan of using a tree on Yom Tov. But when it comes to Shabbos, you don't have that issue because anyway you're not allowed to move the lamp on Shabbos, because even once it went out, even after it went out, it's still Mukta. So that hits the coin to the Yehuda. Eli, I'm a kid of Shimon, really. But if you were to think that Rav holds like Rav Shimon, Mali Shabbos or Mali Yom Tov, then what would be the difference? Shabbos or Yom Tov would be the same thing, because either way, once the lamp goes out, you would, according to Rav Shimon, be allowed to move it, and now you have a problem because it's on a tree, and you're going to end up using the tree on Yom Tov, which you're not allowed to. So that also demonstrates that Rav holds that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda in both of these dinim. Tosfos points out before when we talked about the case with the bed, we only saw clearly from it that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda in one detail. Now we see that he holds, and now we see that he also holds on the detail of Nigur Deis Kasai, that once it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, it remains mukta at the beginning of Yom Tov. Therefore, so that shows that Rav in fact holds like Rabbi Yehuda. The problem with that is the Rav to Rabbi Yehuda. Sit away. After all, are you telling me that Rav agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on the dinim of mukta? Well, bo mi name the Rav, but we find another case. They ask Rav the question: Mahu l'tal tuli shraga the chanukasa mikame chabori b'shamsa? Are you allowed to move the Hanukkah lamp, the Hanukkah menorah, because of the chaborim on Shabbos? So during on Shabbos Hanukkah, the chaborim we talked about briefly before. They were a group among the Persians. They were actually the priests and the extra religious guys among the Persians. And in particular, the Persian religion at that time involved worship of fire. So they had a law. They had a law in places that were controlled by the Chavarim, which included Babel, that on their holidays you're not allowed to have a fire anywhere outside of their temples. So therefore, what would happen is, suppose that one of those holidays happens to come out during Hanukkah. So therefore, you would let's say, for example, now when we learned the sugya of Hanukkah a few weeks ago, we said that you're supposed to light the chaser on the door leading out to Rosh Hashanah. In mitzvah Pesach, they said in the host, the proper way is you're supposed to do it by your front door. But the problem is, when you have one of these chagas of theirs, then you're not allowed to. So then you're going to want to take it, having lit it on the outside of your house, like you're supposed to. Then you're going to want to take it inside. So the question is, are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? Now, obviously, we're not talking about a situation where if they find you with fire in your house, it's going to be sakonis nefashis. It's sakonis nefashis. It's nothing to talk about. So we're talking about, let's say, for example, they might give you a fine. They might put you in jail for a couple of hours, whatever. So not something that involves the korach nefesh, but something that involves a shas and chak, a difficult situation. Tosfos asked the question, by the way. I mean, if we're concerned about that, then why are we only asking about the Hanukkah lamps? Why aren't we asking about the Shabbos lamps also? You have on Shabbos Hanukkah, of course, you have Shabbos candles lit as well. Why aren't we concerned about those? So Tosfos says, because, okay, listen, I mean, even these chaborim, I mean, you know, after all, they got to be practical. I mean, they can't expect a person to sit in the dark in their house on one of their chagas. So necessarily, okay, they would allow a person to have a little bit of light in their house in order to eat. So they're not going to bother you about the Shabbos candles. They're going to bother you about the menorah, about the Hanukkah candles.
They would allow you to do it in public?
No, Hanukkah candles they wouldn't allow you to do at all, not in private and not in public. So if you, for example, so if you lit the menorah on Hanukkah by your front door going out to Shasar Adam, and then you find out, wait a second, it's one of their holidays, and you've got to bring it inside, so the question is, are you allowed to do that? So the point is, Tosfos is saying that even once you have it inside, so what? I mean, if the chabarim come and check inside your house, they're going to find a Shabbos candle as well. Well, they're going to make you problems with that also. So Tosfos says, no, I mean, come on. They're going to allow you to have a candle in order to eat by. They can't expect you to eat in the complete darkness. But a menorah, which is not for the sake of light, it's for the sake of prophesizing the mitzvah, that they're going to have a problem with. The Maloya Royim in the back of the Gemara, now the Chokmas Manoya actually in the back of the Gemara, brings up another possibility. He says, okay, maybe what we're talking about is, let's say we said that B'Shachas HaKana, or we said over there that B'Shachas HaKana, Tosfos mentions this over there, that says there B'Shachas HaKana, you don't have to light it outdoors, you can light it to begin with indoors, but Tosfos says that maybe B'Shachas HaKana is where the government made a gzeira not to light the menorah at all. Chokmas Manoya says that, okay, maybe also it could be that, so we're talking about you did light it on your table, and now the question is now you want to move it into another room someplace in your house. Anyway, the question is, are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? But Amalahu Shapur Dami. And Rav says you're allowed to. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, how would that work? According to, now we're talking about after it went out. Fine. While it's still lit, wallets to list, and then you still have then you can't anyway because even a coin could have shipped it. So, but the question is, once it went out, so still, you know, it's been sitting by the door of your house. So that's the Shabbos. So the Chabad police are going to come by sometime during Shabbos and find it over there. And hey, you had an illegal lamp list on Shabbos, and we're going to fine you for it. Sort of, and Rav says you're allowed to move it in that case. So that shows he doesn't hold like Rav Yehuda. This is Shatav Chach shiny. It's different when there's a Shatav Chach. When we see, because in fact, in fact, we find in this connection that after they asked Rav the Shaila, and Rav said, yes, you can move it on Shabbos, so Rav Kahana and Rav Ashi is probably supposed to be, asked Rav, Hochi Hilchasa, is that really the halacha? So since when are you allowed to move it on Shabbos? Wouldn't it be Mukta? But Amalahu, and he answers them, the guy who Rav Shimon, Lismachala Bashatachach. Rav Shimon is worthy enough, his opinion is worthy enough that we can rely on it in a Shatachach. So we see that Rav himself does not really hold like Rav Shimon, but he says, well, it's a Shatachach. Again, we're not talking the Kruach Nefesh, we're just talking about where the guy is going to get a fine or something, then we can rely on Rav Shimon and allow moving so otherwise normally we wouldn't. But normally Rav would hold, like Rabbi Yehuda, that such things are mukta on Shabbos.
No contradiction.
So no contradiction, exactly. Okay. Next. Okay, so now let's figure out more details about Rav Shimon's opinion about mukta. So far we've said that Rav Shimon has a very narrow definition of mukta. So let's figure out exactly what is his definition. So the Shlokish asks Rav Yechanan as follows. Shikim shazoron bakarza. Suppose you have grains of wheat that you planted in the ground before Shabbat. Now, they haven't yet taken root, because obviously, so the question is whether you're allowed to take them out and eat them on Shabbat. So shikim shazoron bakarza, or basin shetachas tanadolas, or eggs that are already under a chicken, where the chicken is going to be brooding on them and hatching them, and eventually the chicks are going to develop from them. Mahu, what would be the din according to Rav Shimon? Would he say that such things are mukta? In the case of the wheat, it actually points out it's talking about that it didn't take root in the ground. It took root in the ground. Obviously, you can't pick it out on Shabbos anyway. That would be a malacha of koyster, of harvesting on Shabbos. The ritva also adds that it has to be that they're not covered by dirt, because if they're already covered under the dirt, then the dirt is mukta. So it has to be that we're talking about that you planted them, that you made a little hole in the ground or whatever. You put the weed in there, you didn't cover it with dirt, and now the question is, it didn't take root, are you allowed to take out those grains of weed and eat them on Shabbos? And the same thing with the egg. You had the chicken laid an egg. Instead of taking it to eat, you decided to let the chicken brood over, to have the chicken sit on it and eventually hatch it. Now, during Shabbos, let's say you change your mind and you decide you want to eat the egg, are you allowed to? The point of the question is, that Rav Shlokish is asking, ki lesrei l'Rav Shimon mukta, when do we say that Rav Shimon does not hold of mukta, hecha d'vadachya d'yadayim, it would only be where he didn't, with his own hand, push it away. So, for example, let's say, we talked about, the case of the oil in the lamp. So, okay, once the lamp goes out, then the fat is fine. When you first put it in the lamp, okay, you were saying I don't plan to use it. But eventually the lamp goes out and now that oil becomes available again. As opposed to, let's say, the wheat or the egg, as long as they're left in their current place, then they're not going to be usable. So the question is, would Rav Shimon say, yeah, but in this case, you yourself put the wheat over there, you yourself put the egg over there, so maybe therefore it should be, maybe Rav Shimon would agree that it's also, hechad gachi b'dayim islay mukta, maybe where he actually pushed it away with his own hand, then he would agree that is considered mukta, because in other words, unlike the cases we were talking about before, or for example, we had a couple of days ago, the case involving the beehive over there, where you have the two honeycombs that are left there during the winter for the bees to live off of. So we said that according to Rav Yehuda would in fact be mukta, because you didn't specifically had in mind before Shabbos that you're going to eat them. Rav Shimon would say he said the other way around, but he doesn't hold a mukta. But fine, in that case, he wasn't doche b'yadayim. He didn't take that honey and do something with it to demonstrate that he doesn't plan to use it. Just the opposite, he left it there. But over here, he actually puts the wheat into the ground. He actually puts the egg under the hen. So maybe it's different. Or maybe Rav Shimon doesn't care and there's no distinction. Amalei, so Rav Yechanan answers him, Ein mukta l'Rav Shimon ela shemen shemener v'shar shu dolet. No, in fact, Rav Shimon would hold that there's no such thing as mukta, even if he was doichad yadayim, except for the oil in the lamp while it's burning. And the only reason Rav Shimon says it's mukta over there, hoyova hukta l'mitzvotai hukta l'isurai, because Rav Shimon says that there are two factors. Number one, it was set aside for the mitzvah. It was set aside for the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles. And also, therefore, as an outgrowth of that, it's mukta as far as the isur to touch it on Shabbos. So the gears that we have in front of us in the Gemara is huktzal mitzvah, because it was huktzal mitzvah, therefore an outgrowth of that is huktzal isurei. On the side of it, he was bringing the gears from Tosfos Yeshanim that actually hoyva huktzal mitzvah is the huktzal isurei, that it has both. It was set aside for the mitzvah and it was set aside for the isur, that because after all, you can't take the oil out of the lamp as long as it's burning. Because that would be an issur of kibbul. You're putting out the lamp. In other words, Rav Shimon is saying only when there are those two factors involved, with a mitzvah that you set aside the thing for, and to take it away from where it is now would involve an issur, like taking oil out of a lamp would involve an issur. Then Rav Shimon is saying that it's mukta. But in the case of the wheat or in the case of the egg, you don't have that. There's no hukta on the mitzvah. Right? And there's no huktzal isurei. So therefore, you would say that even though you would doichet b'yadayim, nevertheless, he would still say that's not mukta. Okay. So the question is, the less like huktzal mitzvah. So are you telling me then that Rav Shimon does not hold that you can have something which is only huktzal mitzvah, so, and that alone, even when there's no isur in taking it off, is enough to make it mukta? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa like this. First of all, we're going to look at two braises. The first one, both of them are going to be talking about dinim involving sukkahs. We're not going to see clearly from the first braisa that it's according to Rav Shimon, but we're going to quote it first because it's a known reliable braisa. It's a braisa that's known to be from the Beit Medrash of Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia, and those kinds of braisas we like to quote in the Gemara because we know they're accurate. Then we're going to bring a second braisa which shows that the first one in fact represents the opinion of Rav Shimon. So the first braisa says, "Shikachah pilchos." We learned this already. We learned this actually already in the first paragraph. Second paragraph, rather. We said, sikacha pilchasa, if you have a sukkah, on sukkahs, you put up proper schach on it, and then the itra, and then you started decorating it, the krumim of a sdinin, with krumim of a sdinin on the tsuyarin, with blankets or sheets that have pictures on them, the tolaba egoizin, or you hung in it nut from the schach or from the walls, you hung in it nuts, a farsikin, peaches, shkedim, almonds, the rimonin or pomegranate, the apalkalai shalanovim or clusters of grapes, the ataris shalshibolin or crowns, wreaths made out of stalks of grain. Like you take the stalks and you weave them together to make something like a crown. Or yenis, shmonim, or slosser, so you put in there glass cups or glass containers kind of hanging from the scrap containing wine or oil or flour. So all these kinds of sukkah decorations, the braisa says, also they stop at my hand, ad masoy yom tov achron, you're not allowed to use any of those decorations to eat them, for example, until the end of the last day of sukkah. Meaning until the end of Shmini Atzeres, until the end of Hashanah Rabbah. And the reason is because it was set aside for the mitzvah. So it was set aside for the mitzvah. And actually, what we have is Shmini Atzeres, you don't have a mitzvah of Sukkah. However, you have again the din that we talked about before, that once it was mukta at the beginning of of Shabbos or Yom Tov, then it remains mukta for the entire day. So since it was mukta at Bein Hashmoshes of Shmini Atzeres, and it had to be because Bein Hashmoshes of Shmini Atzeres is a prophet still, whether it's daytime or not. So the mitzvah of Sukkah might still apply then. So therefore you wouldn't be allowed to use a Bein Hashmoshes. And once you're not allowed to use a Bein Hashmoshes, then already it would also apply throughout the day of Shmini Atzeres. So the point is, we see this basic concept therefore of that is Mukta. And in Hisna Alei and Akol Hisnoi, if you made a Tanai on them, then everything follows your Tanai. The Gemara explains in Sukkah, that they were in Beta, that the Tanai you have to make is that you're saying that during Bein Hashmoshes of going into Yom Tov, I'm not separating myself from them. In other words, I'm still considering them available, Bein Hashmoshes going into Sukkot. And then it works the other way around. Once it's not mukta going into Sukkot, then it doesn't become mukta the rest of Sukkot either. Okay, you have other Rishonim learn, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch to be on the safe side, is you might have to make that Tanai every day. Anyway, the point is, now when it comes to the Noi Sukkah, there's no melacha involved taking it down. You can't say that there's an issur involved in taking it down. You see that all there is it's chukta l'mitzvasa, that it was reserved for the mitzvah, and yet we're saying it's also to take it down, even though if you were to, let's say, so you had one of these fruits or something hanging from the schach or hanging from the wall, there's no malacha involved in taking it down on Yom Tov, and still we say you're not allowed to unless you made that tonight. And the question is, I mean, my bit of Shimon, okay, who says that Braita represents Rav Shimon's opinion? Maybe it's Rav Yehuda's opinion. And the answer is no. The Tani, Rav Chiya bar Yosef Chameder of Yechanan, no, we know that it represents the opinion of Rav Shimon based on another Braita. Rav Chiya bar Yosef taught in front of Rav Yechanan, Ein Noitman Eitzim in Asukha B'Yom Tov, Elam in Asamukha. Now let's talk about a different Yom Tov. Yeah, now you have, besides that you have a sukkah, where you have the mitzvah of sitting in a sukkah on sukkahs, by the way, I should mention before we go further with that, Tosfos points out, given that Rav Shimon doesn't hold to this concept, that once something is also at the beginning, that it remains also the whole time, then that part of the Braisa about that it would be also until the end of Shmini Atzeres, so the end of Simchas Torah, fine, that part may not be according to Rav Shimon. But the rest of it, the rest of it could be according to Rav Shimon, and we see that like this. Now let's say, besides that on Sukkot, you have a sukkah which you sit in because of the mitzvah, you may also have different times of the year, you have a sukkah that you put up just to have a nice place to sit and relax in a cool area. But let's say you have such a sukkah built for a different Yom Tov, for Pesach or for Shavuot. But the Braisa says, Ein Noitman Eitzim in a sukkah b'Yom Tov. So on Yom Tov, on Pesach, or on Shavuot, you would not, let's say you have, you would not be allowed to take wood from the actual walls of the sukkah or from the actual covering of the sukkah on Yom Tov, even if the sukkah fell down, where then you're now, if the sukkah is still standing, obviously you can't, because you have a malacha of soiser, because you have a malacha of tearing down a building, and that applies equally well on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. But if it fell down, you don't have an issue of soiser anymore. But you still have the issue that you still have the issue that it was mukta, so you wouldn't be allowed to do that. Elam in asomukla, but you are allowed to take from wood that is near the walls. Meaning, Rashi describes, you have, let's say, bundles of wood that were near the walls. Now those are not subject to mukta because those to begin with were not part of the sukkah, and you didn't have in mind. That they were going to be called a sukkah in the first place. Therefore, you're allowed to take those bundles on Yom Tov and use them for firewood. Reb Shimon would say that if the sukkah fell down, then again, he doesn't hold of the concept of muksa, so therefore he allowed you, once the sukkah fell down, he would allow you to take wood from it. The Gemara in Beis actually explains that even Reb Shimon, now similar to what we talked about yesterday, for example, in the case of a lamp, where Reb Shimon allowed you to use the oil from the lamp once it went out, but only if, we said, only if it was a small lamp, where you can reasonably expect that over Shabbos it's going to go out. Not, we said, not if it's a large cup or a large bowl or something, where then it's much less likely it's going to go out during Shabbos, and therefore you didn't have in mind before Shabbos, and therefore it would be muktzeh even if one's in Reb Shimon, even if it unexpectedly went out. So the Gemara in Beis points out the same thing over here. When Reb Shimon is saying you're allowed to use this wood from the sukkah that fell down on Pesach or on Shavuos, where it's not a sukkah for the mitzvah, it's just a sukkah that you made in order to sit in the shade, he would have to be talking about even before Yom Tov, the sukkah was kind of shaky, and you had reason to think that over Yom Tov was going to fall down. So therefore, you had in mind, even before Yom Tov, that if it falls down, you're going to use the wood for it. And even then, the Tanakhama, which is Rabbi Yehuda, is saying over here it's also, because again, according to him, you would have to have it still considered muktzeh, because the fact that it was standing when Yom Tov began. But Reb Shimon would agree that if it was very sturdy before Yom Tov and it fell down completely unexpectedly on Yom Tov, he would agree that you can't use wood from it on Yom Tov. Anyway, the point is, Reb Shimon says that if the sukkah was shaky before Yom Tov, then you're allowed to use it. The shoven the sukkah sachag b'chag. Now, both the Tanakhama and Reb Shimon do agree that when it comes to the sukkah of sukkahs, on the Yom Tov of Sukkot, where then besides for the question of Soyser and the question of Mukta, you also have that Sukkot of Mitzvah, that it was designated for the Mitzvah of Sukkot. So they would agree, so even Reb Shimon agrees, Shehi Asura, that it would be Asur. And by the way, unlike the decorations that we were saying before that you can make a Tanai on, when it comes to the wood of the Sukkot or of the walls of the Sukkot or of the Tzach, there's no such t'nai that's valid either. Even if you make a t'nai that I plan to use at Bein HaShemoshes, that still only helps as far as the decoration. That doesn't help as far as the actual sukkah itself. And even Reb Shimon agrees to that. So the Mishnah, the Braisa finishes off. The Imhisna, well, if he made a t'nai on it, a kol afi t'nai, then all goes according to his t'nai. Again, we're going back to the case where it's not on sukkahs, where if he made a t'nai that he plans to use it after it falls down, then even the Tanakhama will agree that he can use it. But that doesn't help with a sukkah of sukkahs. Anyway, the point is that we see that therefore that the first braisa, which again Rashi says we wanted to quote that braisa, the one that listed all the sukkah decorations, because that one was taught in the yeshiva of Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia, and therefore we know that it's a reliable braisa. We know that it's not going to be like occasionally the Gemara will do when it quotes a braisa and says that there's a mistake in it. But here we're not going to say that. And then the second braisa in and of itself is not as reliable, but once we have the first braisa, and then the second one is telling us that Reb Shimon would say that when it comes to a sukkah on sukkah, that it's osur, that then it shows that the first braisa, which also says that it's osur, is according to Reb Shimon as well. So we're back to the question, therefore. So Reb Shimon evidently holds that something can be muktzeh even when it's only set aside for the sake of the mitzvah, even when there's no Easter per se involved, because again, taking down the decorations from the sukkah or using the wood from the sukkah itself after the sukkah fell down, there's no Easter involved, there's no malacha involved, and still Reb Shimon is saying that's also. So what are you telling me, Reb Yechanan, that Reb Shimon requires that there has to be both, that it has to be that it has to be huktzel mitzvah and huktzel isurai in order for it to be muktzeh, and therefore he's saying, for example, in the case of the wheat or in the case of the egg, that it's not a problem. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ein shemen shebener kamin. You're right. We don't mean Reb Yechanan didn't mean that the only case that Reb Shimon would say is muktzeh is only the oil on the lamp. He means similar things to that. Where, because it was set aside for the mitzvah, And because of that, as an outgrowth of that, Huktzah Isurai, it becomes Muktzah as far as it's Isur. In other words, it's not two separate criteria that it has to be a Huktzah Mitzvah and a Huktzah Isurai, that there's an Isur involved in taking it out. Even if we only have Huktzah Mitzvah, that is enough, according to Reb Shimon, to prevent us using it on Shabbos. So therefore, an example of that would be the oil in the lamp, where you put it in the lamp for the sake of the Mitzvah of Shabbos, of Shabbos light, and therefore therefore fine, once the lamp goes out, then you don't have the mitzvah anymore, then according to the Shimon, you're allowed to use it, but as long as the lamp is burning, then not, and even chose to point out, you know, according to the Shimon, as we learned before, even the oil that drifts out of the lamp, even though that's not being used anymore, and you wouldn't have an issue of Mechaba in taking it, but still the Shimon would agree that as long as the lamp is burning, that oil is Huktzah Mitzvah, right? And therefore, the same thing would apply to the sukkah decorations and to the sukkah itself. But again, that wouldn't apply to the wheat or to the egg. There's no mitzvah involved. You didn't set it aside for mitzvah. And therefore, Reb Yochanan is still saying that in that case, Reb Shimon would not say there's mitzvah. Itma Nami, in fact, we said also a clearer statement of what Reb Yochanan says. Here in the second version, we're clarifying that Rabbi Yochanan actually explicitly used the word ke'ein similar to the oil. So our whole question was that Rabbi Yochanan, the first version of what we had, Rabbi Yochanan saying to Rish Lakish, is that the only case that Rabbi Shimon would say is mukta is only the oil and the lamp. And he said that, what are you talking about if we see that Rav Shimon holds that also the sukkah and the sukkah decorations are mukta? So now we have a second version that Rav Chiya Ba'Abba clearly said that Rav Yechanan had said that only things that are similar to the oil in the lamp when it's burning. We're hoyuba huktzah l'mitzvah, because it was designated for the mitzvah, huktzah l'isurai, therefore automatically it becomes muktzah as far as the isur as well. So now it becomes clear that Rav Shimon is not saying only the oil, Rav Yochanan is not saying, according to Rav Shimon, only the oil and the lamp. He's just giving that as an example of huktzah l'mitzvah. But in fact, the same thing would apply, according to Rav Shimon, to anything else that was huktzah l'mitzvah, where automatically, according to Rav Shimon, therefore, it's huktzah l'isurai. So the wheat and the egg, not. But the oil and the lamp and the sukkah decorations and the sukkah, yes. Okay. Now another definition of what Rav Shimon says is and isn't mukta. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, ain mukta. But Rav Shimon ela grogris mukim bovan. The only thing according to Rav Shimon that would be mukta on Shabbos would be dried figs or dried grapes. Now, meaning, in other words, what happens is like this. When you go and dry grapes and raisins, what happens is, to begin with, obviously, when they're fresh, they're still edible. Then what happens is, when you put them up on the roof or wherever to dry, they go through a period of time where they're not edible. They go through a period of time as they're in the process of drying where they're not edible. I mean, I guess in a pinch, you could eat them, but basically. But basically, they're not edible. So when Shabbos begins, they're still not ready yet. Then, even if they finish drying during Shabbos, Reb Shimon would agree that they're mukta. Now, here, by the way, Reb Shimon would agree in this case that once they're mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, they remain mukta for all of Shabbos, which we said before. He doesn't hold to that concept. The reason is, we touched on this before, Tosfos had mentioned that there's a difference between something which you're able to finish it off on Shabbos versus not. You have one of two things. You have either in the case of a lamp where, okay, you can't put it out on Shabbos, but there's a reasonable expectation that it will go out on Shabbos, as opposed to these grogers smoking. You never know when they're going to be finished. They might end up being ready over Shabbos. They might not, as opposed to the lamp. You also have, it's not biyada, it's not something that you can cause to happen faster, unlike with certain other cases, like we talked before, for example, a couple of days ago about a basket that has little baby chicks on it, where you could scare off the chicks and therefore make the basket mutter to be used again. But over here, you don't have either of those, and therefore, and since they're not edible in the middle over there while they're in the process, then Reb Shimon would agree Reb Shimon would agree that these things are mukhtar. So the question is, midi achrin aloi? So are you telling me that other kinds? So in other words, Shmuel's definition of what Reb Shimon considers to be mukta is different than Reb Yechanan. Reb Yechanan's was that it has to be that there's a mitzvah involved. It has to be that he set it aside for a mitzvah, and then once he did, then it becomes also as well, as in the case of the oil in the Shabbos lamp, or as in the case of the sukkah decoration. Shmuel's definition is a different one, which is that it doesn't depend on whether it's a mitzvah. It depends on, it has to be that he was doche the yadayim, that he actually put it aside, in this case, where he actually used it to make grapes or dried figs. But in addition, you also have that, as long that you also have that it's sitting over there, and right now it's not edible, and it's not the yadayim, it's not in his power to make it edible on Shabbat. So that would be the case where Shmuel is saying where Reb Shimon would say that it's mukta. Okay, so the question is, umidi achrin aloi? So are you telling me that other kinds of things are not going to be mukta according to Reb Shimon? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, hoya oich b'te'enim v'hoisir. Suppose a person on Shabbos was eating some figs, and so the point is, even though he was eating some figs, And therefore, you would think that the fact that he was actually eating them meant that he didn't never intended for any of them to be mukta. But the hoisir, he left them over. He didn't finish eating all of the figs he had in front of him. The helam lagag lachasam grozer. So he brought them up to the roof in order to start making dried figs of them. Or ba'novim, or he was eating grapes and he left some over. The helam lagag lachasam simukim. I don't think we can be talking about where he was eating the fruit on Shabbos, because if he was eating it on Shabbos, then he can't be bringing it up to the roof to start making dried, fruit from it on Shabbos. So evidently we're talking about he was eating from it before Shabbos. He brought some of it up to the roof to make grogers or primukian out of it, make dried figs or raisins out of it. So the din is, the Braisa says, lo yoicho achiyazman. He can't eat from them on Shabbos unless he designated them that he plans to eat from them on Shabbos. Now again, usually once you start drying them, usually they become inedible. But after all, in a pinch, you could eat them. So therefore, if he has in mind before Shabbos that he plans to do that, then fine, you're allowed to eat them on Shabbos. But otherwise, not. Otherwise, the fact that he put them up there shows that he put them out of mind, and he was going for them to be a dayim, and therefore they'd be mukta. And the brightest thing is, the same din applies to peaches, uvachavushin, and quinces, which are a kind of small apple, uvashar kominei peiros, and all kinds of other fruits. Now, even though other kinds of fruits don't go through the same process as grapes and figs, when you have, again, when you dry grapes and figs, we said there's a period while they're being dried, where they're completely, well, not completely, but where they're almost inedible, and it would only be al yedei hachak that you eat them. When it comes to these other fruits that we're mentioning in the Braisa, when it comes to peaches and quinces and so forth, the same thing does not apply. They don't go through the same process of being inedible for a while. And yet the Braisa is saying the same thing applies, that you're not allowed to eat them unless you have them in mind. So we have to ask, in mind, which Tana would this be according to? Now, okay, the Braisa doesn't say, so we have to figure out, maybe it could be according to Rabbi Yehuda, but no. Elema Rabbi Yehuda, are you going to say that this Braisa goes according to Rabbi Yehuda? Can't be. Uma hecha deloy dachi v'dayim islay mukta. Rabbi Yehuda holds of mukta, even where you weren't doche v'dayim, even where you didn't do anything to make it, to say that you're putting it out of mind. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's the other way around. If you have something that you want to use on Shabbos, And by default, in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the default is that something is mukta, unless you had in mind to use it before Shabbos. So therefore, according to him, you don't need the case over here where you were eating fruit and then you put it up onto the roof. According to him, you don't need to mention the case where you put it up onto the roof. If it was a coincidence of Yehuda, the Braita could have mentioned an example. Let's say where you have fruit in your storage area, where you have let's say a storage area which is called an oyster. You have a storage area in your house for fruit. You weren't doyfet via diet. You have it stored up over there, but you didn't specifically intend that over Shabbos you're going to go and take from that oyster. And even then, Rabbi Yehuda would say it's mukta. So why would the Breisach, why would our Breisach be presenting a case where you took it up onto the roof and would doyche be a dying? Ela lav Rav Shimon. Evidently, our Breisach has to be according to Rav Shimon. And so we see that Rav Shimon holds his din even when, even when it comes to other fruits that don't go through the stage of being almost inedible when you're drying them. So what are you telling me that Rav Shimon only holds of this concept by groger satimokim? We see that he would hold of it by other kinds of fruits as well. So the Gemara says, no, lo olam Rav Yehuda. No, after all, we could say that this braita is according to Rav Yehuda. So therefore, Shmuel can still be correct that Rav Shimon, in fact, would only say the din by groger satimokim because they go through that stage of not being edible. He would have no problem with dried apricots or not apricots, peaches or whatever, because those don't go through that stage of being non-edible. So then, if the Brai says according to Rav Yehuda, so you're asking what's the chiddush then? According to Rav Yehuda, in that case, even if he didn't specifically bring it up to the roof to dry, it would be mukta according to Rav Yehuda anyway. No, you could say the chiddush of the Brai is because he was eating them to begin with. So therefore, stop that. You would have thought according to Rav Yehuda, given the ka'ocho v'ozo, after all, he is going and eating from this fruit. Loyli boy has mana. So maybe therefore even. So he was eating from this fruit, so he showed that he's not Messiah to ask from it. So maybe, therefore, the rest of it should not need hasmana to eat it, because after all, before Shabbos, he was showing that he is eating from this fruit and that he has it in mind. So, Kamash Malan, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda wants to tell us that, no, given the hell on Lagag, once he brought them up to the roof, Asuchi Asher, the Dayt Binayhu, right then and there, he was Masiach Das from them and did not intend to eat them anymore. So yes, as long as he has them with him, then fine, they wouldn't be mukta. And even if, let's say, he didn't finish eating all of them and he left some of them on the table, then fine, Rabbi Yehuda would agree it's not mukta, because after all, he didn't do something to be Masiach Das. The fact that he was eating from them to begin with shows that he eventually intends to end up finish eating them. But once he brought them up onto the roof, then Rabbi Yehuda would say that undoes what he did before by bringing them in from his oyster or whatever and started to eat them. So that would be the chiddush. So in that case, then yeah, we could after all say that this braita goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. It doesn't tell us anything about Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Rabbi Shimon might well hold then that you're allowed to eat. That it's only groger sitimukim, which go through that stage of not being edible, but not other kinds of fruit which don't go through that. So no contradiction to Shmuel's definition of what Rabbi Shimon says is mukta. Okay.
So according to Rabbi Yehuda, from this we see that unless you formally designated before Shabbos or Yom Tov, it's mukta.
Pretty much. I mean, so what we mean is, we don't mean, let's say, for example, I mean, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if, let's say, for example, you have fruit in your fridge, let's say, before Shabbos, he's not going to tell you you need to designate it before Shabbos. We're talking about with the kind of place where you're not typically going to go on Shabbos to get food, or Yom Tov, where you're not typically going to go there to get food. You could conceivably, but you're not so likely to, then Rabbi Yehuda rather would say that you have to pre-designate it before Shabbos. When we're talking about when it's in your fridge or it's in your, or bread in your bread box or whatever, then yeah, he's not going to say that you have to pre-designate it.
Well, yeah, because you couldn't eat anything in that case.
Well, I mean, not that you couldn't eat anything. You would think that maybe you have to pre-designate it, but no, that's not what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. He's only talking about where you have it. Someplace where, like by default, you're not going to go there on Shabbos, although conceivably you could. Okay. All right. Let's talk now. By the way, I mean, these two definitions of Rabbi Yehuda's these two definitions of Rav Shimon's opinion, according to Rav Yochanan and according to Shmuel, are not contradictory. They complement each other. You have, on the one hand, Rav Shimon does hold of the concept of Muktzah Machmas Easter, and we have that concept also in Halacha, because again, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, when it comes to much of the dinim of Muktzah on Shabbos, we pass them like Rav Shimon. So the concept of where it was Muktzah Mitzvotai applies. Therefore, for example, it applies to the oil on the lamp or to the sukkah decorations or whatever. And also the definition about where you would doche it, the Adayim, and right now it's not edible like the Grozos of Simukim, also applies according to Rav Shimon. Okay. Next, let's talk more about Rav Shimon's opinion. Bamnei Rav Shimon bar Rebbe me Rebbe. Rav Shimon, the son of Rebbe, asked his father the following question. Tatzilei Tmara l'Rav Shimon Mahu. What would be the din, according to Rav Shimon, when it comes to Tatzilei Tmara? Now, Tmara is date. Tatzilei Tmara is like this. You have certain kinds of dates. Rashi over here describes that these dates are picked before they're ripe. Dates that are picked before they're ripe. Elsewhere, Rashi says that actually they would never become ripe on the tree. You have certain kinds of fruits that are like that. If you leave them on the tree, they're never going to ripen. They're never going to ripen. You have to ripen them artificially. Tosfos Yeshanim over here on the side brings a different explanation that we're talking about, that you have certain dates that you puncture them. You puncture them again for the purpose of in order for them to finish ripening and dry out, and therefore, well, again, when you make that puncture in them, then it looks really bad. Later on, the appearance of it improves once it dries out. So on the one hand, it is so again. Let's go back to Rashi's explanation first. So according to Rashi, Tatzilei Tmara is again, you have these dates that didn't ripen on the tree. Maybe they're never going to ripen. What you do is you pick them from the tree, you put them in containers made out of lulav leaves, and eventually they ripen in there. Eventually the heat inside, eventually the heat and whatever inside there, and the gases that they give off make it able to ripen. So now the question is, while they're still unripe, while they're still in these containers, would you be able to eat them according to the Shimon or not? Are they like Gregor's Simukim or not? Now, again, you know, they're similar to Gregor's Simukim in the sense that usually you wouldn't eat them at this point before they're completely ripe. But on the other hand, maybe not. According to Tosfos Yeshanim, it's a little bit different. We're talking about that these also, they go through a stage similar to Gregor's Simukim where they're not really edible after you puncture them. But the fact of the matter is that they are a little more edible than Gregor's Simukim. So the fact that Reb Shimon Bar Rebbe is asking Rebbe what would be the din of on those according to Reb Shimon, Amalei, and Rebbe answers him, Ein Muktzah Reb Shimon, Ela Gregor Simukin Melad, only Gregor Simukin. Where number one, he was Dursa Rebbe Adayim, and they weren't edible Ben Ashmashis. When it comes to these dates, he was not Dursa Rebbe Adayim because, number one, they weren't edible before that anyway, because again, they never ripened on the tree. Also, you could eat from them. They're more edible than Gregor's Simukim, even during this intermediate stage. So therefore, so you have two good reasons to say that Rav Shimon would say they're not Muktzah. Only Gregor's Simukim, where number one, you actually took them, you took perfectly edible fruit and put it up on the roof to dry, and it also goes through that stage where it's not going to be edible, only then would Rav Shimon say that it's Muktzah. But not in this case, where to begin with, it wasn't fully edible, and even now, in a pinch, you could eat them. Even now, you could eat them. They are a little more edible than half-dried Gregor's Simukim. Okay. So the question is, now the Gemara assumes that if Rebbe is answering the question according to Reb Shimon, it sounds like it means that he agrees with Reb Shimon on the Dinim of Muktzah. So the Gemara is going to ask that. But Rebbe less than Muktzah. Oh, you're telling me that Rebbe does not hold of the broad concept of Muktzah, that he only holds according to Reb Shimon's narrow definition, because the Pashtos, we would assume that the fact that Reb Shimon Bar Rebbe is even asking Rebbe to clarify Reb Shimon's opinion, Reb Shimon being Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, The fact that Rav Shimon ben Revi is asking to clarify Rav Shimon ben Yochai's opinion implies that he knew that his father holds like Rav Shimon. Otherwise, why is he asking? The Pashkus is asking in order to establish practical halacha. So the question is, does that mean that Revi agrees with Rav Shimon's definition of mukta? Well, it's not. But we learn in the last Mishnah of Masechta Beita, Ein mashkin b'sheichtin et amidbarius, you're not allowed to give a drink to an animal and then shecht it, which is called midbarius, which is an animal that's out in the desert. Abel mashkin b'sheichtin et amidbarius, but you are allowed to give a drink and shecht the animals that are in the house. In other words, the point is, on Yom Tov, we're going to say, the ones that are out in the midbar, as we're going to define it now, are considered mukta, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to shecht them on Yom Tov, as opposed to the ones that are baitas, the ones that are closer to the house, you would be allowed to. This mashkin, the sheikhin, by the way, is the Gemara mentions over there that it's a good idea to give an animal a drink before you shecht it, because it helps with sircha. There's two explanations of what it means. One is that Rashi over here explains that it makes that then the skin of the animal won't stick as strongly to the flesh, and it'll be easier to skin the animal afterwards if you give it a drink first. There's a different explanation that what it helps with is it helps as far as silch, the shock brings it, and Shulchan Aruch, that it helps as far as silch in the lungs. If you give the animal a drink before you shecht it, then it helps to reduce the amount of silchus in the lungs, which of course makes it more likely that the animal is going to be kosher. In particular, I think the way the Shach says it over there is that if you have like a very thin silcha, where if it's attached to another part inside the chest, then it's going to be a problem. But like this, giving the animal a drink causes that silcha to snap off, and now it's just hanging loose from the lung. And when it's hanging loose, then it's not an issue. There are a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about a deeper idea behind this, about this business of mashkin b'sheichtin, that we see that a drink, this is the idea of a drink by a Fabrengen, helps you to be able to shech the nefesh of a hamis. There's also actually a sikha that everyone talked about, a siyum on the Masechta Beita, because this whole Mishnah and Gemara over there is at the end of Beita as well. And the Rebbe explained basically what it is you have in Avoda, you have things that are like meat, where you have to absorb, you have things that you have to work with to be mevara, things that you have to absorb, like meat which you eat, which becomes part of your own dama basa kamsara. Then you have other things in the world which you have to be mevara, but more of, you don't have to be so deeply involved with them, they have to be more like skin, like it's something external to you. You use it for clothing, but you don't actually eat it. So you have to be able to carefully distinguish between those two. And what makes it that you're more able to carefully distinguish, as we're saying over here, to be able to strip off the skin from the flesh more easily, is you use a drink of water, where water represents Torah as you're learning it, with a sense of bittul. So when you're learning Torah and doing mitzvahs with a sense of bittul, then it helps you more easily be able to, when you're doing your avodas habirurim, to be able to distinguish between the different kinds of things, the ones that you have to be deeply involved with versus the ones that you don't have to be as deeply involved with. Anyway, the Mishnah has said over there that, again, you're allowed to shech the baitos, but not the midbarius, and the tanya, we learn in a baitos, Elohim midbarius, what is the definition for the purpose of animals from the midbar? Now, we're not talking about wild animals, because those we're not even talking about, so you'd have to trap them, and then trapping itself is a malacha on Yom Tov. So we're talking all domestic animals, but we're saying there's midbarius versus baitos. So like this, kosher yotis for Pesach, you have animals that go out around Pesach time to graze. So they go out into the meadows, and they stay there, and they stay there for months at a time. The nichnosis berivia, they come back only when the rain starts falling, which is cheshvan time. So the entire time from Pesach until cheshvan time, which is 7 months, they're staying out there in the meadows and grazing freely. Those are the midbarius. bisos, what are the definition of the bisos animals, which we're saying that you are allowed to shech because they're not considered mukta, they would be, they go and graze outside the tchum of the city, but they come and sleep overnight inside the tchum. So if every evening they come back into the tchum of the city and they stay overnight over there, so fine, they don't come back home, but the fact that they're at least within the tchum of the city makes them that they're bisos, makes them that they're considered therefore home animals, and therefore they're not considered mukta, and you're allowed to shech them on Yom Tov. That's according to the Chachamim. Rebbe says either one of those would be considered bisos, because at least they do come back home at some point. Fine, maybe they only come home after 7 months, but they still eventually do come back home. The Elohim Midbar. So therefore, according to Rebbe, either one of those kinds, you would be allowed to shech on Yom Tov. The Elohim Midbarius, so rather Rebbe says the definition of Midbarius, Kosher Royus Ba'afar, when they graze out in the meadows, the Ein Nechnosis L'Yishuv Loi B'Maisacham of Loi B'Maisacchamim, they don't come back into the settled areas, into the city, neither during the summer nor during the winter. They remain out there all the time. So they belong to you, and they're domestic animals. They're not wild animals like deer or whatever. But they never come back home. They always stay outside. So those Rebbe says would be the Midbarius. But anytime when they actually do return to the city, then they would be considered bisos. Anyway, the point of that is that we see that Rebbe does hold of a concept of mukta, because again, all this time we've been saying, according to Reb Shimon, it would be mukta only if he was doiche at the Yadayim. Now, he wasn't doiche these animals at the Yadayim. He didn't send them, he didn't push them out the door and tell them, go graze. They left on their own, and they're just not bothering to come back. They continue grazing out in the meadows indefinitely. And still, Rebbe apparently agrees that those are midbarius and you can't check them on Yom Tov because they're mukta. So we see that Rebbe holds of a concept of mukta that Reb Shimon doesn't hold of. So the answer is, there's two possible answers. One possibility is Rebbe would say the midbarius actually are like grogers of simukim. You could consider it that he was zochah them b'yadayim. He did actually send them out to graze. They didn't just necessarily go out on their own. He did send them out. It is a real hassle. It is a real bother to go and actually bring the animals back. And in that sense, it's like grogers and simukim, where you could eat the grogers and simukim when they're in the middle of drying in a pinch, but it would be very hard to do that. The same way over here, it would be very hard to go and collect these animals from wherever out in the middle of nowhere they are. So one possibility is Rebbe would say, in that case, then those are similar to Gregor Simukim, where Reb Shimon would say that they're mukta. Okay, so these are mukta as well. That's one possibility. A second possibility is that, going back to Reb Shimon the Rebbe's original question, it didn't mean that Rebbe actually holds like Reb Shimon. Again, we started with the premise that if Reb Shimon the Rebbe is asking Rebbe to clarify Reb Shimon's opinion, evidently it means that Rebbe agrees with Reb Shimon. Now the Gemara is saying, not necessarily. Reb Shimon the Rebbe is asking Rebbe to clarify Reb Shimon's opinion, and Rebbe is answering, I'll tell you what Reb Shimon's opinion is. Doesn't mean that Rebbe himself has to agree with it. Rebbe himself might hold according to Rebbe Yehuda's opinion. That's a second. The Yibor's same, or yet a third possibility, with the Vrayim de Rabbanon Kamalahu. This that we're saying in this discussion about Baisis and Nibarius might be the other way around. He's saying, according to the Chachamim, he's saying like this, Libi di lesli mukta klal. As far as I'm concerned, there's actually no concept of mukta at all. I hold like Reb Shimon that unless you would go say it be a gayim and it's inedible, then it wouldn't be mukta. In this case, even these midbarius, now we're gonna change our mind from what we said just before. We're gonna say maybe that the midbarius are not like grogers to mukim. Because after all, maybe you didn't push them out on your own. Maybe they went out on their own. Maybe it's not necessarily the difficulty of gathering them back is not comparable to the difficulty of eating grogers to mukim. So Rebbe would be saying, according to the third answer, I myself don't agree that any of these animals would be mukta. Lidichu, but you hachamim, oiduli mihas, shouldn't you at least agree? Gehecha devoitis v'pesach v'nechnosis v'revia, the bisus minu, shouldn't you at least agree that as long as the animals return back home at some point, even if it's only after 6 or 7 months, that they should be considered baisis minhu, that they should be considered baisis, and they should not be considered mukzah. And the Chachamim say, no, even those we consider to be nivorius, we only consider them baisis if they come back every day, every night. Okay, so
right, if they don't show up one time, they're not nivorius in the year.
So right, if they only come back if they only come back when it starts raining, then the Chachamim would say they are nivorius.
Where but every day.
Only if they come back every day would they be biased, the Chacham would say, right. So every night.
If they miss a day, they'd be biased?
Well, I don't know about that necessarily. Maybe not. I mean, the pastures, animals are creatures of habit, right? I mean, once they come back one night, the pastures are going to be used to coming back every night. In any case, so the point is, the Chacham say that your definition, you're arguing that we should at least accept a very broad definition of biases, and say that they can be considered biases even if they're away from the house for months at a time, from the city for months at a time. We can't agree with that. In that same sicha that I was talking about, of the siyum of the Sechta Beta, the Rebbe analyzed this part of it also. That the deeper idea behind it is that Rabbanon, or the Rabbanon is Moloshin Roiv, so they're talking about, they're looking at the majority, at how it is with the majority of the Jewish people. If you have a person who at least, so okay, during the daytime, they may be nowhere near the city. They may be out in the wilds where they're not supposed to be. But at least when it comes night, when it starts getting dark, when they realize that it's dark by them, then they realize, you know what, I got to get back. So I got to get back to civilization. I got to get back to where I'm supposed to be in Torah and Mitzvot. Then at least they can be considered biased. But if even at night, even when it's dark, they still don't realize to come back, and they still stay out in the middle of nowhere, away from other courts, then the Chachamim say there's nothing we can do with those on Yom Tov. You can't shech them on Yom Tov, you can't use them for Karbonos on Yom Tov, etc. Whereas Rebbe, who is the Nasi Hadur, so he says, you know what, even a Yid who you don't ever see him, you almost never see him in the city, you almost never see him having any connection to other courts, maybe once a year, then you can still consider him somebody that we're able to be makriv, somebody that we're able to bring close to Hashem. And then on top of that, according to the last answer in the Gemara, where Rebbe is saying that he doesn't even hold a concept of mukta at all, so he would be saying that as far as I'm concerned, there is no difference between baisis and nidbarius. Even if you have an animal or representing a nefesh of Bahamas of a person, which is never in the city, it's always away, it's never where it should be. Nevertheless, we can still bring it close and shech it on Yom Tov and use it as a carbon. And that would be the style of Rebbe and of the Nasiim who follow him.
That's very nice.
Yeah. Okay. Moving along, let's talk now about Rabbi Yochanan. Let's talk now about what Rabbi Yochanan holds. So we've been dealing with the question of what various Amirayim hold. So what we discussed before about the question of what Rav holds about Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon, as far as Muktzah, we said that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Now let's talk about Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. So let's start off. Omer Rav Avachana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Omru, that Rav Avachana says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Omru, the Chachamim in the Yeshiva have said Halacha Kirab Shimon, that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon as far as Muktzah. Now, the Gemara is assuming that if Rabbi Yochanan reports what they said and doesn't argue with it, it sounds like he agreed with it, that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. So the question is, "Mi Omer Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, did Rabbi Yochanan in fact say such a thing? But we find that there was a certain old man, or old Talmud Chacham, Kiruya, from a place called Kiruya, Siruya, or others say that this person was from Siruya. Anyway, he asked me, Rabbi Yochanan, he asked, Kina Shel Tanagolas, a nest or a coop of chickens, Mahu L'Satoli B'Shabbos, are you allowed to move that chicken coop on Shabbos? Amale, and Rabbi Yochanan answers him, Klum Osri El L'Tanagolim, was the coop made for any other purpose other than for chickens? Now, the point is, in other words, the chickens themselves are mukta, because obviously you can't do anything with them on Shabbos, you can't shech them, so it's considered mukta machmas gufay. So therefore, the coop itself, Rabbi Yochanan say, would be mukta. Now again, that works only according to Rabbi Yehuda. That wouldn't work according to Rabbi Shimon. Now the The point is actually the Ritva says the Gemara is assuming over here. Now you could argue, what do you mean? If there's chickens in there anyway, even if Shimon is going to agree that it's bosses for Java or Oster, that the coop is serving as a base, as a stand for something which is Oster, namely the chicken. What we're talking about, let's say there are no chickens in it right now. So there's no chickens in it right now. It's not a bosses, but maybe there weren't even chickens in it in the beginning of Shabbos. So therefore, it's not bosses for Java or Oster, but still Rabbi Yechonon is saying that's Mukta. That doesn't work according to Rabbi Shimon. The answer is, Hocha, my student is there for Royach Met. The answer is that Rabbi Yechonon would be talking about the case. When are we saying that the chicken coop is Mukta? When there's a dead baby chicken there. Now that would be Mukta, even according to Rabbi Shimon, because again, you didn't, it's like the cases where we talked about before. You didn't expect that it was going to die before Shabbos. So if it was dead before Shabbos, then the Shimon would not consider it Mukta because you could feed it to dogs. And if it was sick before Shabbos, maybe also fine because you expect that it's going to die during Shabbos. Same thing. But because it was healthy before Shabbos and it just died unexpectedly on Shabbos, then again, as we said before, even Rav Shimon would agree that such a thing is Mukta, and once it is, then the coop that it's inside is Mukta as well. Tosfos actually asked the question, why does it mention Dafka, a dead chick? You could have the same din if there's a live chicken there. So Tosfos is showing him, says, practically speaking, because if there's a live chicken there, then you could easily scare it away. And then again, Rav Shimon, who doesn't say that once it's mukta for part of Shabbos, it's mukta for all of it, would say that it's mukta. But if you have a dead chicken there, obviously you can't do that. And therefore, Rav Shimon would agree that the coop is awesome. Okay, the question is, Hanichal Mar Bar Amena Mishmei Derav. Fine, that works according to Mar Bar Amena's statement in the name of Rav, or Rava, it's really supposed to be. The Amar Moida Hoy Rav Shimon Bar Chaim Shemesu Shaskerim. He says that Rav Shimon agrees that dead animals are mukta. Again, if they were dangerously sick before Shabbos and there was a reasonable expectation that they were going to die on Shabbos, then Rav Shimon would allow it. We're going to learn that at the end of the Masechta. But where the animal was healthy before Shabbos, then Mar Bar Amema is saying that Rav Shimon would agree that it's also mukta. So according to that, okay, then in that case, the dead chick is mukta even according to Rav Shimon. But But what about, we have a different opinion also in the name of Rava. We have Ma'abred Rav Yosef in the name of Rava. He says that Rav Shimon would say that it's not mukta even if the animal was healthy before Shabbos. As long as it died on Shabbos, then Rav Shimon would allow it because now you can use it for dog food. The point of it is before Shabbos, it would have been the kind of thing where eventually you're planning to eat it. Now maybe you're fine. You're not shechting it this Shabbos because you didn't shecht it before. You can't shecht it on Shabbos, but still it was designated for human food eventually. And now it's designated for animal food. And according to this way of looking at it, Rav Shimon holds that that's fine. Once it was designated for human food, then automatically it can be redesignated for animal food on Shabbos. So it's not mukta. So according to that way of looking at it, my ikalamema, what are you going to say? Even if the coop has a dead chicken in it, according to that second understanding of Rav Shimon, you would be allowed to move the dead chick on Shabbos and feed it to a dog, and therefore the coop itself shouldn't be mukta. So why is Rav Yechonon saying that? Why is Rav Yechonon saying that it is? Now, obviously, Rav Yechonon could disagree with this, but the Gemara wants to see if we can make it work, even if we can make what Rav Yechonon is saying work, even according to this opinion. By the way, Tosfos points out also the fact that we're saying that the coop is meant for chickens is also meant to explain why it becomes a bosses for Dabar or Oster if the chick is mukta. Because otherwise, you would say, the same way as we said before, that if you forgot coins or something on a pillow or a chair or something, then the pillow doesn't become mukta. It's not bosses for Dabar or Oster unless you meant for it to be there. But here, the fact that the coop is made for chickens is enough to make it be considered a bosses for Dabar or Oster once the chick dies. But again, if we say that a dead chick, if we say according to Ma'abrei de Rav Yosef, that a dead chick is not mukta, then why is the coop mukta? The answer is, The answer is, okay, let's say differently. We're not talking about that there's a dead chick over there. Let's say that there is an egg in, let's say that there's an egg in the coop, and the egg was laid on Shabbos, and that would be also, that would be also on Shabbos. You have, there's the concept of Nolad. By the way, Avraham Moshe, you asked the other day whether Nolad is also on Shabbos. The answer is it depends. There's actually different kinds of Nolad. There's a kind of Nolad where something came into existence on Shabbos, like this egg, versus you have where something was transformed on Shabbos. The first kind is Muktzah on Shabbos. The second kind is not. On Yom Tov, both of them are also.
But it's only any time on Shabbos.
Yeah, so as long as the egg was laid sometime on Shabbos, then it would be Muktzah. So if you have an egg there, then there you go. It's there you go. It's Muktzah because of that. The problem with that is the problem with that is v'ha'amar Rav Nachman man be islay Muktzah islay Nolad de leslay Muktzah leslay Nolad. Rav Nachman said that no. Rav Yehuda, who holds of the concept of Muktzah, would also hold that Nolad is also. Whereas Rav Shimon, who says, whereas he says, Rav Shimon, who doesn't hold of the concept of Muktzah in a broad sense, also doesn't hold of the concept of Nolad. So we're back to the question. According to the question is, again, according, now not everybody agrees with Rav Nachman on that, but again, the Gemara wants to make this work even according to Rav Nachman's opinion, that the two things are interdependent, Muktzah and Nolad. So therefore, therefore the question would be, if we take that view, then it means Rav Shimon does not hold of Nolad either. So you're back to the question. How if Rav Yochanan is saying that the coop is Muktzah, and you're saying it's on the basis of because there's an egg in there, that would amount to saying that Rav Yochanan does not hold like Rav Shimon. So why is Rav Yochanan reporting approvingly what the Chachmei HaYeshiva said, that the halacha is like Rav Shimon? The answer is, we could give a different answer, the iste beitzas esroyah. The answer is, you could say the egg there is not just a regular egg, it's an egg that already has a chick forming inside it. Now that kind of thing, that kind of egg is definitely muktzah because you're not allowed to eat it. The chick itself that's inside the egg is actually considered nevela until it actually breaks out of the egg. And Rashi says it's not even the kind of thing where you could feed it to a dog because the dog is not going to eat it because it has a shell. So that would be considered completely muktzah even according to Rav Shimon. And again, because the coop is made to have chickens inside it, and it's a normal expectation, therefore, that there are going to be eggs in it, and some of those eggs are going to have chicks. So therefore, it would be considered bosses for Java also, and even Rav Shimon would agree with that. Therefore we can still make Rav Yochanan din work even if we say that he agrees with Rav Shimon on Muktzah, because again in this particular case Rav Shimon would agree that it's Osir. It's similar to Grovius Simukhi. So then the question that this old person was asking, that this old Talmud Chacham was asking Rav Yochanan, was, can you say that it's not considered a bosser for Zavar Osir? Therefore, maybe what you would be able to do is take the coop and tilt it to make the egg fall out, and then you'd be able to move the coop on Shabbos. And in other words, it would be the equivalent of having a pillow that you left money on before Shabbos. And Rabbi Yochanan is telling him that no, it's considered a bosser for Zavar Osir because the coop is meant for chickens and for eggs, and therefore it's considered as though you deliberately left it there before Shabbos, and therefore it would be also to move the chicken coop. We'll stop over here and we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Beis Hashem, about what the story is, whether in fact Rav Yochanan holds that Rav Shimon or not. We'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Shkoyach. Wonderful day.